Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're answering your listener questions.
You know what, buddy? We've got listener questions to get to. We've got five of them, including a listener who is wondering if prepaid college plans, if they are a good deal. Another listener, he is wanting to know what he should be doing with some different maturing savings bond that he got way back in the day. And then another listener is wondering, we're going to tackle the Roth versus traditional IRA debate.
A classic.
It's like a classic battle that it's been a minute since we have visited. So I'm looking forward to those three questions, plus a few others. But by the way, so we talked last week about how you and I, we went to a Braves game. And one of the things we didn't mention, well, first of all, thank you to Adam. He's the one, our friend Adam, he hooked us up with the seats, with the fancy seats, by the way. And with the fancy seats, you get free concessions. So you got a couple bratwursts that were really good. I got some brisket that was pretty tasty. But you also have
access. You got free beer, too.
And free, which is, I mean, come on. That's like
right up our alley.
You're speaking our love language right there. But you also get free prepackaged foods like roasted peanuts, Cracker Jacks, even some cotton candy.
Cracker Jacks, the classic ballpark treat.
Super classic. And so my question to you, Joel, is it frugal or cheap that I took home a bag of unopened Cracker Jacks to share with my kids as a little treat?
I think it's frugal. I think if you had stuffed your pockets with 18 Cracker Jacks, or if you'd like brought a backpack and you just started like loading that puppy up.
That makes all the difference.
That would have been different. Yeah. But one on the way out, big deal.
It makes me think of like at Costco, the samples. It's just a part of the deal. Yeah. Like they expect you to try the samples, even if you're gonna grab one on the way out the door, no big deal. But like you said, if you show up with a lunchbox and start loading it up with half-cut granola bars or something like that, like you're gonna get looked at.
You're at minimum gonna get the stink eye, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so there's it's not like we're breaking any rules. I guess if there is a clear rule that said, "Hey, no," which I guess I don't know if that's a technical rule.
No,
hey,
I don't think so.
No snacks allowed. Then it would maybe be considered cheap. But there's just the element of wanting to get your money's worth too, because again, these are the fancy seats, and so I'm like, all right, I don't want to.
You didn't pay a dime for them, though, bro.
We got them for free, but especially if you had paid for the nicer
seats. Gosh, yeah.
Like, there is an element of wanting to make sure that you get your money's worth.
Yeah. It makes me think of taking packets, right, when you're at your favorite fast food chain or something like that, and taking a couple, or maybe a couple more than you think you'll need is fine, loading your bag up so you can have like ketchup and you don't actually have to buy it at the grocery store. That's cheap, I think.
Yeah,
so
yeah, if Emily was
even
there,
though there's no rule, there's no sign up that right. says maximum four allowed, it's still just not cool. It's uncouth.
If Emily was there and you told her to open her new purse that you got for her and we're like, baby, load it up. Yeah, yeah. Probably not cool.
Yeah, not cool at all. All right, let's mention the beer we're having on this episode, Matt. This is called Var by Halfway Crooks. It's a Czech style pilsner. I don't know what makes a pilsner Czech style in particular, but we'll give our thoughts on this one at the end of the episode.
Well, maybe because I guess the original style of it was, I'm assuming it originated in Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, but what makes that different than a German pilsner? There's got to be something. I'll figure it out. But let's move on, Matt. Let's get to the...
Or we won't by the time we get to the episode, because we're going to be talking about money.
I'm going to Google it later, though.
Let's do it.
Let's get to the topic at hand. We're answering listener questions. And if you have a question you'd like Matt and I to address on an upcoming Ask HTM episode, we would love to hear it. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask for simple instructions to record your voice memo. Send it our way so we can feature it soon. But Matt, this first question comes from a listener who wants to save up to help his kid get a higher education in the future.
Hi guys, this is Charles here. My wife and I are expecting our first child. Naturally, I'd like to get a jump on college savings. I'm doing some research on prepaid college funds versus a 529 plan. We both currently live in the state of Florida that has a prepaid college savings plan, which seems to be pretty good. I ran the numbers and it seems like the yield is actually higher for the prepaid account versus a typical yield on a 529 plan. Just wanted to get your thoughts on these plans. From my understanding, you can transfer the money to another state university, but neither my wife nor I actually plan on staying in Florida long term. So wanted to get your thoughts on these two options. Thank you.
That's right, Charles. You can actually transfer some of those funds, but we'll get to that here in a second. First of all, congrats to you. You are expecting your firstborn. And by the way, you and your wife, you're expecting. You don't even have your kid yet.
They're like
and,
on the ball.
And you are looking to save for your kid's college. Charles is the kind of guy that like grabs life by the horns. He's
yes.
a type A personality, and I love it. I love your enthusiasm on saving for your brand new kiddo's future. But we do want you to temper that excitement just a little bit, because yes, 529 plans specifically, they've gotten a whole lot better thanks to recent law changes, which allow excess 529 contributions to be rolled into a Roth IRA for your kid. We love that this is now like a safety net, essentially, that allows you to sort of glean some of that money that would otherwise be penalized were you to not use it for higher
That was
education.
A massive improvement, and it completely changed how we viewed 529s. We were kind of sort of ambivalent towards them, and still, we don't think they're like the best place to... Like, there are other places saving for your own retirement that are more important, but man, we sure like them a whole lot more now, don't
we? Yeah, it's always more important to be funding your own retirement accounts. Like, so that's one of the points I wanted to make. Your own retirement, your own financial goals, make sure that you prioritize those first fully before you start socking away for a kid's future. Because, yes, it seems like it's the right and loving thing to do for your kid, but the truth is, there is no scholarship for retirement. There is only Social Security, which may not cut it for you. And there are many ways to skin the cat when it comes to paying for college. So just make sure that you are at least getting the full match in your workplace retirement account and that you're maxing out your Roth IRA before you start putting money into, honestly, any account that is going to be primarily for your kid's education.
I think that's a good rule of thumb. Getting, doing both those accounts really well before you even think about doing anything else.
Those are the buckets you want to fill first.
And heck, if you have an HSA...
Any overflow then goes into those.
Yeah, and if you have an HSA, I would say HSA takes priority over the 529 account too. But let's talk about the pros and cons specifically of the prepaid plan that Charles is asking about, Matt. I mean, assuming he's all set on the retirement front, let's get to the heart of his question, which is whether or not he should consider the Florida prepaid plan or stick with the more standard 529 account. And first, it's good to explain to folks how these prepaid accounts work. Basically, the Florida plan, you choose the type of college that you want to fund. That could be 2-year or 4-year degree. And then you have a set dollar amount that you pay every month to pre-fund this plan. So for example, the prepaid plan to cover a bachelor's degree from a state school is $181 a month, which sounds reasonable, right? Then you can set it, you could forget
compared
it
to the cost of college. You're like, oh, that kind of sounds like a deal.
Exactly, and it is. These accounts can be a pretty sweet value, and one of the main reasons they're so attractive is that it can help you protect against tuition inflation, which we've seen, right? If you look at an inflation chart, the cost of college and the cost of healthcare are two of the things that have gone up the most in our society over the past couple of decades. And so as college costs continue to rise, prepaying for college gives you more of a known quantity, which is cool, which is kind of nice. There's some peace of mind in that.
That's right, especially if you value that higher education. But there are some downsides as well. And the biggest one is lack of flexibility. It's true that you do have to be a Florida resident in order to open one of these plans. And you don't need to even remain a resident in order to keep it open. And actually that you can use these prepaid funds to pay for college at a school that is out of state, like you mentioned. But it's probably still not the best bang for your buck in terms of saving for your child's future education. So as opposed to fully paying for that education with a state school in Florida, if you are looking at an out-of-state school, the plan will only pay the average rate of public colleges and universities there in the state of Florida. So with that in mind, we would rather see you fund a traditional 529 account with, again, your excess investment dollars, especially since you are... like you are knowingly entering into the future knowing that you're not planning to stay there in Florida. It would be different if you have this long legacy of family members who were born and raised in the state and all of your family members were buried in the cemetery. Like there are
in
certain,
Gainesville, right? Next to the University of Florida.
There are certain individuals who are like, yeah, I'm going to raise my family here and you're going to bury me in the backyard.
We go to 4 football games a year. You know, they wear the clothing that's associated with the school and I've indoctrinated them.
Yeah.
They've wanted to go there since they were a child. That's different. Then the prepaid education makes a ton of sense because it is going to be the best money saving device. But you're right, Matt, based on the fact that Charles and his family are going to be leaving the state of Florida, it seems to make less sense. And
you just never know, too. Like, there, you might have a kid, even though you, and like you said, you raise them to be a Floridian. What if they end up moving to California? Like our kids, they have their own opinions and their own minds. And, it's important to keep that in mind, too.
Sure. Yeah. So I think this plan is too rigid for Charles's purposes.
Exactly.
And for his kid and where his kid wants to go or whether his kid even wants to go to college at all in the future. And basically, no matter where you open a traditional 529 plan, it's an investment vehicle for wherever your kid wants to go to college. And again, it's just got that increased flexibility now, the being able to turn it into Roth money, which is awesome. So we would say going the traditional 529 plan route makes the most sense from where we're sitting. And if you move at some point in the future, Charles, you can, and you move to a state that offers you a tax deduction for contributing to a 529 account, then you start contributing to that state's 529 account. But I think the traditional version just makes more sense given your particulars than the prepaid.
Totally. Yeah. And of course, again, if your kid doesn't end up going to college and, you know, you can still roll that 529 into the Roth, you know, like we just mentioned. But if you've been funding the Florida prepaid tuition plan and your kid ends up not going to college, well, yes, you can get your money back, but any growth that you've experienced over the past 18 years, it gets completely wiped out.
Yeah.
So all that interest that you would have earned gets forfeited, and that's a huge bummer. And you would have been better off, you know, stuck that money even in a savings account, not even invested. Like you would have earned way more just with that money sitting in a high yield savings account.
It's like an interest free loan at that point to the state. And so that it's not the worst thing that could have ever happened to you, but considering you're asking the question ahead of time, I wouldn't want to be in that position, and I would rather see my money grow. And even if your child does go to a Florida school, you're still going to be fine having invested, socked away money inside of a regular 529 plan. You'll have hopefully plenty to cover a lot of that tuition.
Yeah, it may not be perfectly optimized, but one thing that you learn as you just kind of go through life is like you can never plan things out to be exactly like to be the most optimized.
So I think the added flexibility
goes
helpful.
A long way.
It's worth potentially turning down that super duper optimization ability that prepaid plans can offer if you jump through all the hoops to make them work for your family.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So speaking of kids, we're going to get to a question here in a little bit about when is the right time to give your kid a credit card. And we will get to that question and more right after the break.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, Matt, let's keep going. We got more questions to get to.
Four more, in fact.
Yes, exactly. And this next one, this one is specifically about redeeming bonds that this listener's had for a while.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Dan from Minnetonka, Minnesota, and I have a question regarding Series EE bonds. As a kid, my grandparents would give me bonds instead of cash at birthdays, holidays, graduations, etc. And those bonds, since they're 30-year bonds, are starting to mature. A few of them already have, and I have cashed them and put them into our high-yield savings account. But there's a few yet to be cashed, and the last one matures in August of 2035. The interest rates on the bonds that are yet to be cashed top out at 4%, and starting in about 2 years, the ones that will be cashed dip down to as low as 2.8%. My question to you is it worth cashing in the bonds now and sticking them in a high yield savings account or CD to take advantage of high interest rates, or should I let them mature till their maturity date? I guess I don't know the pros and cons of either route, so I'm looking to hear your thoughts on that. I plugged all of the bonds into treasurydirect.gov to see if I can answer this question for myself, but unfortunately, they only allow me to enter a maturity date as far off as November of 2023, which doesn't really help me forecast how much those bonds will be worth when they do hit their maturity date. So my other question is, do you have another tool that you can point me to that would help me better answer this question? Thanks so much, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts. Bye.
Joel, if only we all had grandparents like Dan did.
I know.
Instead of giving us toys as kids, instead they were investing for our future.
I'm going to call my grandma tonight and be like, what's up with that?
That's a great gift, even though Dan, I'm sure he was probably...
I don't know. She got me cool stuff back in the day. I had like a Davy Crockett coonskin cap. That was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Kind of like from, A Christmas Story?
Oh, yeah.
The bully. So were you like the bully?
Pretty much. No. The exact opposite.
Dan probably did want something like that. He probably wanted a Sega Genesis.
He's like, come on, Grandma. Like that. This is so lame. But now he likes it.
As an adult, yeah, I'm sure he thinks this is pretty stinking cool. Now that you've got this cash regularly, you know, coming into your life, Dan, I love that you are in this position and you are now trying to figure out what to do with these savings bonds.
Yeah, so now that Dan is sitting in the catbird seat, he mentioned the difficulty of the treasurydirect.gov. It's true. The website is not terribly intuitive. It's not great. And we were pointing a lot of people in that direction, Matt, to buy I-bonds for a little while because the rates were so great. And especially compared to savings accounts.
Yeah, they're pegged to inflation. Now that inflation has eased slightly, we're not seeing the rates like they used to.
Exactly. But people had to deal with that crummy website if they wanted to buy I-bonds. Mm-hmm. And the rules, by the way, surrounding the redemption of those EE bonds that Dan's asking about, they're similar to the rules for redeeming I-bonds, which, like I said, a lot of How to Money listeners bought some of those. So it's worth discussing. And I think not just Dan can take something away from this, but all How to Money listeners who are like, when and how do I actually redeem those I-bonds?
That's right.
So yeah, basically you have to hold both of these types of bonds for at least a year. Your money is locked away. You don't have access to it for 12 months. But once that time period's up, you have access to that money again. You don't have to, right, grab those funds, but you can. But if you don't hold those bonds for at least 5 years, you're going to forfeit 3 months worth of interest. And so in Dan's case, he is well past the 5-year mark on all of the EE bonds that he has. He's not going to get penalized at all. He's not going to forfeit any interest.
No worries there.
But at the same time, right, you're not doing yourself any favors, Dan, by continuing to hold them.
That's right. Yeah. So having had those EE bonds, like, they have been especially great for Dan over the past decade because rates for savers were crummy. New EE bonds were literally paying 0.1% for years on end, which made them effectively worthless considering inflation. But despite newer bonds and savings accounts paying next to nothing, Dan, he kept earning higher returns in one of the safest vehicles out there, you know, to be earning like 3 and 4% and more on most of those bonds, while like 0.5% was the most that savvy savers could actually get out in the open market. That's pretty dang cool.
Yeah, these new pop-in savings rates we're talking about, close to 5% essentially for people in a traditional savings account through one of our favorite online banks. That's new. And for a long, long time, yeah, it was cheap to borrow money, but it was also savers were getting crushed in the process.
It was painful to save money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, if you had bought EE bonds at the right time, you were outpacing those despondent savers for a long time. But let's talk about what you do now. We would suggest selling those bonds, being done with them, and then take that money, stick it in a vehicle that's going to offer you a better return. You mentioned savings. You mentioned CDs. Those are both great options. And again, they're going to pay you more than what you're earning currently on those EE bonds. CD laddering, which we talked about on a Friday flight not too long ago, that could make a lot of sense for you with some of this money as you cash it out of the EE bonds. But I'm also curious about how much you're investing and what vehicles you're investing in. Because even in today's environment, which is better for savers, Dan, we would say don't lean too hard in the savings direction. Yeah, it's nice to get 5% on savings, which, you know, couldn't get for a long time. But make sure that you're investing meaningfully in tax-advantaged accounts for your future, too. That's how you build and grow wealth. Savings is great, and you want a certain amount liquid, of course. But you also don't want to overdo it, because savings alone isn't going to help you outpace inflation.
Yeah, I mean, so much of it comes down to what it is that you actually want to do with that money, right? Like, what are your goals for that money? Because if it's if we're talking about money that's going to become your emergency fund, well, you don't want that money even in a CD. You want that to be liquid cash within your savings account. If you are looking at like a short-term savings goal, like something in the next 2 years, then a CD, that makes sense, right? It's like a guaranteed return on money that you will know that you want access to in like 18 months, that kind of thing. But even still, honestly, if you're stockpiling that money for, say, an investment opportunity, well, that's an instance where you want that cash even still to be liquid, because you want to be able to pounce on something where, say, a property to show up if you were talking about a down payment for something like that. And so really, I guess the reason I mention this is because CDs are good for some of those rare short-term goals. But beyond that, you really should be investing. Like, if you're talking about 3+ years before you want to access that money, there is a very, very good chance that money invested in the stock market, even in a taxable brokerage account, it's going to be much higher than where it is right now.
Yeah.
And so
he might be too conservative if he takes money from these bonds
exactly.
And he just sticks it in savings and CDs, and he might be Yeah, underexposed to the market.
Yes,
really.
Exactly. I mean, so for, like personally, the only CDs that I partake in are penalty-free CDs because of the flexibility that they offer. Yes, you lock in that rate, but effectively, they behave just like cash because they are fully liquid. Mm-hmm. I think with like Ally, maybe you can't touch it for like literally it's like 7 days. But beyond that, you have full access to it without getting hit with any kind of penalty. So, Dan, I think what's important is to think through what you're planning to use that money for. Once you designate what goal this money is going to help you to achieve, then I think that can help inform what you should be doing with that money when it comes to, you know, whether it's, again, having cash on hand for an emergency, a short-term or near-term goal versus a long-term goal where you definitely do want to be exposed to the market, where you do want to be invested.
Yeah. It's kind of like you have different pieces of your wardrobe for different things, right? You got a suit for once a year where you need one, or at least me, right? Rarely do I ever dress up, and I like it that way. But and even collared shirts, man, it's a rarity for me. It's like t-shirts and shorts these days. But
hey, you're wearing a collar shirt today.
Yeah, that's true.
Looking sharp.
Oh, thank you, man.
I got the t-shirt on today.
Well, and I think CDs are kind of like that suit. It's not that they make no sense. And I think, you know, rates, especially for medium-term savings, they've not been better on CDs in a really long time. But what are you saving for? What's the time period? And it's really only, they really only make sense for people who have those medium-term goals. Other than that, straight up, liquid savings and investing in the market are the two best things.
See, you said suits. I would have called CDs more like a sweater vest or or something like that. It's not like the most casual thing. It's also not the most dressy thing. But I also see what you're saying. Like, we're talking about the specific uses for your money. Yeah. Identify that and that'll tell you.
Do you have a sweater vest?
No.
Okay, me neither.
Or just like a sweater. You know, like a sweater.
I didn't say sweater vest because I don't have one and I don't think I'll ever wear one.
You can dress it up. It's like Carlton from
not trying to hate
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
The Jim Trestles of this world. But
identify what it is that you want to use or do with that money, and that'll inform what you should be, the different types of vehicles where you are sticking that money.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go ahead and get to our next question. A listener, she's wondering if now is the right time to give her kid a credit card.
Hi, Matt and Joel. My name is Tara, and I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah. And I have a question about when it's the right time to get a credit card for one of your kids. I have a son who just finished his freshman year of college, and he is asking if now is a good time to get a credit card so he can start building some credit history. He is very responsible and very financially literate, but I am still worried about the risk of just having that option of going into credit card debt, and I don't want him to, you know, get into any trouble when he's so young. So I was wondering what you guys recommend about how important is a credit history for a college student, and when is a good time for them to start building that history. Thank you.
Matt, you said kid, Tara said kid, but sounds like her son is a young adult, right?
College kids.
Yeah.
College young adults.
When you're as old as we are, I guess everybody's kids now. So,
That's true. We're getting older.
We're not ancient, but I don't know. I feel older. But now...
Hey, you don't look it, buddy.
Oh, thank you.
You're looking fresh with the collar shirt on over there.
Well, you know, I dressed up today. And
they do have snaps, by the way, which...
Curl snaps.
It takes it down a notch when it comes to dressiness.
Or brings it up a notch.
Well, yeah, depends where you're from.
Depends on your viewpoint. This is like Montana fancy right here.
Exactly.
Well, and Tara's from Utah, but a lot of people dress like this there, too.
Pearl snaps. All right.
They got to be a thing in Utah.
Let's get back to it.
I would say now is a great time for her son to be opening a credit card.
Agreed.
Okay. So, and it's really a great time for a few reasons. First, it's easy for him to get a credit card as a college student because with proof of enrollment, he should be able to get a solid student credit card, no problems. Discover has some of the best student credit cards, by the way. Secondly, he's probably is going to make some mistakes, right? With money. Almost nobody that I know of handles money perfectly. And he's probably going to rack him some debt or not pay the bill on time or something like that. That is something a young adult is prone to do. He's going to make those mistakes on a smaller scale because that card is going to have a smaller limit. And you said that he's responsible, that he's financially literate.
He knows what's up.
Yeah. My guess is that's largely because of Tara's influence, because she's been an awesome mom imparting knowledge over the years. So the older he gets, the more independence that he achieves, the less influential Tara, I'm sure, as you already have realized, that you're going to become in his life. And so we would say putting plastic in his hands now, while you're still somewhat involved in his finances, will help make sure that he doesn't go too far off the rails without anybody noticing. If he gets his first card at 23, he's in his own apartment, whatever, you've lost a little bit of that oversight. And so I love the idea of him getting it while you still have conversations and you still kind of know a little bit more about what's going on with how he handles money.
Yeah. And Tara, I'm not sure if you heard our recent episode with Yanely Espinal, but she got into credit card trouble while she was in college. That was a big part of her story. And it took her a while to crawl out of it. But she also didn't have someone who was there asking her questions, who was offering advice, who was helping her out.
She was even made fun of, right, when she went down the frugal path.
That's true.
Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. And so, on one hand, we wouldn't recommend that every single college student out there get a credit card, because many actually can get into trouble. But learning to use them wisely is the goal here. And we think that waiting until he's completely out on his own, that can often result in more trouble over the long haul. So that being said, I think now really is a good time to start. It makes me think about like teaching your kids how to drive. I've been thinking about this because like recently the kids, whenever we're at a light and it turns green, they like yell, go. And I've had to not stop, but like turn to them and say, hey, actually, it's important to not just immediately go and assume that the intersection is clear. Like you want to look left, you want to look right and make sure that someone's not going to run a red light and where you would get T-boned. But there are these opportunities to start teaching them about driving, even though none of my kids are anywhere near driving age. Yeah. And you don't want to overdo it, right? Like where everything is a lesson.
Not every
mom or dad. But then like, so with the driving example, like imagine once your kid gets their learner's permit, when should they start driving? Like, in my mind, day one, because the more experience that they have behind the wheel with you right there sitting shotgun
under your tutelage,
they're going to have experience. They're going to have logged a ton of miles. That way, when they do go out on their own, they're going to be able to make wiser decisions. And so when it comes to credit cards, even if you have for everyone else out there, if you have a kid who doesn't have the ability to get a credit card because they're too young, well, you start talking to them about what it means to use credit well. And then when they are of age and they can get a credit card, you are also hopefully you're going to be able to be there alongside, walk alongside them, help them to maybe create a framework as to how it is that they should use a credit card wisely.
All right. So speaking of which, I think one of the things that Tara can and probably should encourage her son to do as he gets this credit card is to suggest that he use that credit card to pay for maybe just one expense in his life, to not just go overboard and be like, pay for everything with it, but start to wade into the waters, dip your toe in, and like maybe use it only for gas purchases, let's say.
Boom. I like it. It's a good guardrail.
Yeah.
We're sticking with a car theme.
Yeah. So it's like I always use it at the gas station and I don't use it for anything else, and I pay it off on time and in full every single month. I think from a behavioral standpoint, this will help him start building his credit history, which is going to be important, you know, when he wants to rent an apartment or a house in the future. And then he'll be keeping that utilization low at the same time, building up his credit score. But by charging very little, it gives him the best of both worlds. And some folks would tell you credit scores don't matter. That's not true. Not in modern society. I don't, Matt, you and I, we don't love all the rules of the credit score game, the way the bureaus play that game, but it's just not a game you can opt out of in modern society these days. So
that's true.
Yeah. So I think maybe that's a good kind of way to think about it. It's like, hey, yeah, you should open this card, but maybe just use it for this and that purchase. Pick one thing, pick a recurring subscription, have it on auto pay, pay it off every month, start building that credit score, and eventually he can expand his usage in the future.
That's right. Yeah. And Tara, you're kind of talking about like how important is this? And yes, it does have immediate implications to his finances now, but honestly, it's not massively important right now. It's just that sort of what Joel was saying, the habits that handling credit well, what that is able, like the impact that is going to have for him long term, the ability to start building that the length of credit history, the impact that that's going to have down the road. It's all of these things like way down the road that are going to positively impact him, as opposed to like the near term things. Like this is a long game that we're talking about here. Which, okay, I've got another example. Like makes me think of, we recently paid one of our daughters to rebraid some tassels on one of our rugs because the vacuum cleaner like pulls it apart or whatever. And it's pretty complicated. Like it took her a while to actually do it. We paid her $7. And it's not that $7 dramatically increased her net worth and we're all about increasing her net worth right now. No, it's about work ethic. It's about tying doing a job or chore to getting paid. And it's about helping her over time to build up that money and to teach her how to spend it well, how to save it well, how to give it away well. It's all of these things. It's all of the lessons that she's learning over time. It's the foundation that we're building now, as opposed to the immediate benefit that it would provide her by being able to buy something for, you know, with $5, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I don't think you want to teach your kids that credit cards are bad. I mean, I think there's some parts of the personal finance media sphere, they want to say that. And so people run away from them, often to their detriment, their, you know, hurts their credit score. And if you just think credit cards are the enemy, no, they're not. They can be a tool. So help mm-hmm. teach your son that they can be an effective tool to build his credit. And eventually he'll get rewards and stuff from them, and he'll learn how to use them effectively. And they'll actually help spur him on in his, you know, wealth building attempts and in his financial future. So I think having positive conversations about how to handle credit wisely and wading into those waters now, again, while you guys can still have that open line of communication, makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, it's better for him to make mistakes with like a single zero behind it as opposed to like three or four zeros.
Yes.
Behind that number. But also don't forget about the piggyback approach to helping your kid establish a good credit score. Some credit card companies out there, they don't have any sort of age limit. You can literally put your infant on your account, which would help them to build some credit history. Others, they don't allow you to do it until
That's a good note for Charles, by the way, who's very proactive. Once his kid has a social security number, like, he can make that happen.
He's like, yeah, they're going to come home from the hospital. And
first things first.
But there is no rush on this because, like, honestly, just adding your kid at the, like, at age 16 or 18, like, that's totally fine as well. So you might want to consider doing this. Adding him as an authorized user on one of your cards, giving him that head start, but then not giving him possession of that card, in addition to encouraging him to get his own credit card too. By doing all of this, I think he's going to have one of those 800 credit scores with, you know, before no time at all.
He's going to have a better one than we do.
What's great too is that his credit history, even it's a smaller portion of your overall FICO credit score. Is it 15% credit history? Whereas payment history and like credit utilization, they take much bigger chunks of that pie that everyone's used to seeing. But it's, even still, him getting started now is going to set him on the path to having a solid credit score.
Sweet. But Tara, keep up the good work. Obviously, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So Matt, we've got a couple more questions to get to, including one about a slightly fancier version of life insurance. We'll get to that and more right after this. Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Kachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Kachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the a.m. in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Kachava. Just go to kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, man, we are back for the break, taking listener questions, and let's hear one now about an insurance product that offers a refund.
Hi, Joel and Matt. My name is Triska Hoover. I'm calling from Phoenix, Arizona. I found your podcast a few months ago and have been enjoying learning about each of you and your families and personal finances, of course. One of your recent episodes talked about life insurance, and it made me think about what I have, which is a return of premium policy for 30 years, at which time I get all the policy premiums paid back in one lump sum. Additionally, it says money can be borrowed against this account. And I assume that when you pay that back, you pay interest to the insurance company rather than your account. And I was just curious if you think borrowing from that account is even a good idea, and if you even would recommend a return of premium policy, or if I should try to cash this out and put it somewhere else. Thanks again. I appreciate all your help.
Triska, thanks for your question. And Matt, we do talk about our families. We've done it on this episode, right?
Yeah, I mean, keeps it, just talking about my daughter rebraiding the tassels on the rug.
All the ways in which he forces her to do labor around the house. That's one of my favorite parts of this show.
Got to put them to work somehow.
Yeah. The truth is there's a lot of places you can turn for money information, and you can go straight to Investopedia for, and honestly, that's a great, great website that has a lot of great information. There's so much information out there on the web. ChatGPT is just another place people turn it for money advice now. And so, we strive to be personal and discuss, like talk about ways in which we're implementing the things that we talk about here in our own personal lives. And so AI, you can't replace two best buds drinking beer.
No, you cannot.
And you can't replace a community of awesome folks helping each other out, like in the How to Money Facebook group. I mean, there's a whole lot more offered than just information in that place.
You know? Yeah. So. And basically, Triska, what I want to communicate is I appreciate you appreciating us because we love podcasting, and obviously we could not do it without all of our great listeners out there. But let's talk about return of premium life insurance. And so basically the way it works, if you are still alive after that term ends, depending on your plan, you'll either get 100% of those premiums back, or sometimes a diminished amount back in a lump sum. But is this a good idea? Because it certainly sounds nice to get your money back, to snag all of those premiums that you paid over the years if you don't end up needing that policy. And again, basically, if you don't kick the bucket in the 20 or 30 year term. But if you want a money back guarantee, which is basically what this is, you're going to have to pay for it. And you might end up paying 30% more than what you would pay for traditional level term life insurance. But honestly, it could even be more expensive than that. You are paying a fat premium in order to take advantage of this sweet, sweet benefit that they're offering you.
It sounds sweet, but it's not.
Yeah.
it sounds enticing. It's a great marketing
air quotes
gimmick
on the sweet, sweet.
Right. But instead of thinking about something like return of premium life insurance as a good investment, which it's not, think about it as a forced method of savings.
Exactly.
That's exactly how
you should be thinking about it.
Yeah. You only get the money you paid in back at the end of 30 years. Nothing else. So you're kind of making it...
No returns, no growth, no other benefits.
We talked about that Florida prepaid plan earlier where it's like an interest-free loan to the state. This is like an interest-free loan to the insurance company. And it would be a better financial option to avoid this return of premium life insurance and take the excess that you would have spent on that policy and stick it into tax-advantaged retirement funds instead. Over that 30-year span, which is the length of most term policies, you're going to see that money grow significantly for yourself. And this is just another complication of a basic product that we're not fans of. It's less egregious than some of the other types of life insurance that are out there that are being sold to people right and left. But it's still, it's not something we can get behind.
That's right. But Triska, if you already have one of these policies in place, what should you do with it? And that's tough to answer without knowing more of the specifics of your policy. Because if you are just a couple of years into this policy and you haven't experienced any significant health issues like cancer or something like that, it's probably going to be worth getting just a plain old term life insurance policy. And then once you've got that in hand, ditch this policy. Certainly get a couple of quotes before you ditch the policy, but you want to make sure that you are shopping around and that you know what is available to you. And you might find that the savings are significant, and then you can use those additional dollars, the difference there, in a more productive way. You can actually invest that money. But if you are a lot further along, or again, kind of going back to health issues, if you experience some, you know, health problems, some medical problems that would raise rates on a new life insurance policy, then it's probably best to stick with this one. And it's not that these plans are necessarily evil or anything like that, but we are against them from a principal standpoint. We would rather you go in a different direction. But at the end of the day, it's honestly a math problem, because you can figure out how much you're saving every single month, and then you can take that monthly amount, plug it into a compound interest calculator at a conservative rate of return of what you would make if that money were to be invested in the stock market. And then at the end of that period of time, you've got a certain amount of money. Now,
and honestly, by the way, your money would be better off in savings than going towards this life insurance product.
Yeah. But then also do the math on, again, if you are pretty far into this term, how many years do you have left? And maybe it does make sense for you to actually hang on to this thing because you are pretty dang close.
You're
to
pot committed.
Receiving that payout.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a math problem at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. So, Triska, we hope that's helpful. And for everybody else out there listening, avoid these. Like, level term policies for almost everyone are ideal, and they're the cheapest. They're the cheapest solution that allows you to funnel more of your money into savings and investment vehicles and less into life insurance. Get the coverage you need, yes. Spring for the amount you need. Don't cheap out on that. If you need $1 million worth of coverage, don't go with $250K, but don't go with the products that get dressed up and cost more. That doesn't make sense for most people. But Matt, let's move on. Let's get to the last question for this episode. This one's kind of a classic personal finance question that really applies to almost everyone.
Hey guys, this is Sean from southeastern Pennsylvania, and I'm currently contributing 15% to my Roth 401k and maxing it out. However, my total savings rate could be higher if I change some of it to traditional 401k contributions because of the tax deductions. And I've sat around with ADP's paycheck calculator going back and forth between traditional and Roth contribution percentages, and I'm not sure what I should do. I'd love your guys' thoughts. Thanks so much. Love the show.
All right, Sean, nicely done. You said you are investing around 15% of your income. That is awesome. And that's what I want to highlight here, because the main thing, the most important thing to consider, is getting that high savings rate in place.
Yeah.
The Roth versus traditional question, like, that's an important consideration, but the heavy lift is getting to the point where you can invest at least 15% of what it is that you are bringing in. And that's the boat that you find yourself in. And I'll say, this is easier said than done. So, Sean, mad props to you for getting to that point.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's get into it though, Matt. Roth versus traditional. It's a big, important decision that a lot of people, most of our listeners, are forced to make at one point or another, whether it's through an IRA that they're contributing to, or whether it's to a work-sponsored retirement account like a 401k. They've got to figure out, which one do I choose? And yeah, you can get the tax break now, opting to stick money in the traditional IRA or 401k instead of the Roth version, which sounds pretty sweet. And again, it's not a bad move. But is it the best move you can make? Probably not. It is true that sticking money into a Roth is taking more money out of your hands in the short term. But given where tax rates are now, which is pretty low historically, and where they're likely to be, which we think is higher in the future, and it's not just a guess, that Tax Cuts and Job Act is set to sunset at the end of 2026, I believe, or 2025?
2025, yeah.
And when it goes away, which it is set to do, tax rates go up in that next year.
Yeah.
And so it's just not a bad idea to pay the tax man now, given the facts that we have at our disposal.
Yeah, yeah. We don't really get into politics, but I see it highly unlikely that we're going to see government spending go down, that we're going to see fewer entitlements and fewer taxes upon us in the future.
Well, we already know. We've talked about Social Security before on the show and just how, yeah, like, will it be there for future generations? We really think so. The numbers show that. Will there be less? And will politicians have to make difficult decisions to fund Social Security in a bigger way? Probably. And will that lead to increased tax rates? Almost inevitably.
Most likely. Yeah. Yeah. And so aside from where taxes are going to go in the future, there are also caveats to this as well, because it's not going with a Roth is not necessarily best for everyone out there. Because if you, let's say you're a high income earner, for instance, you might want to enjoy that tax break now.
Yeah.
Let's say you are single, you are making well into the six figures, and that you might be able to claw some of those dollars that are taxed in that 32% tax bracket back by putting more into the traditional 401k. If that's you, if that's where you find yourself, that might be a reasonable choice. And then even for others, investing in a traditional 401k instead of a Roth is going to lower their AGI, which will help to lower their student loan payment via the income-based repayment plans, the IBR plans that the government offers. So it's not necessarily a black or white decision. There are personal considerations you need to keep in mind as well. But, you know, all else being equal, we are fans of the Roth. And so you were talking about, like, kind of the future implications of tax rates. That's another personal consideration as well, is where is your income going to be in the future? Because you might think that, oh, I'm making pretty good money now. Well, what if you make even more money down the road? If that were to be the case, then it would make sense, if you have the option to jump on the Roth bandwagon now, go ahead, pay those taxes, and then have that money sitting there tax-free, and of course all the earnings where you never have to pay taxes on it again.
Or what if you know that your income is going to go down in the next couple of years?
I
mean, that changes the facts on the ground for you in a personal way too. And so if you're saying, oh, man, I've got the killer job now, but I'm gonna go try to start my own thing and my income is going to be lean, I'm banking cash for that time, well then it might make sense to go the traditional route now, taking the tax savings and
pay
Roth
very little tax on the back end,
and then Roth in future years when your income's lower. But and your employer match, by the way, it goes in pre-tax. So filling up a post-tax bucket, which would be the Roth, contributing more to that Roth 401k, to the Roth IRA as well. If you aren't one of those folks who's making money hand over fist, it gives you a lot more ability to determine what your tax rate is going to be when you do reach retirement age. To have multiple buckets to pull from can really help you lower your overall tax rate over those years. And so my parents, they just retired, and I'm so glad they have two buckets to pull from, because it's going to help them minimize their overall tax burden when those disbursements are dialed in properly. And that is something we've talked about. It's like, cool, this year maybe it makes more sense to take Roth money because you still had some earned income from the jobs. Next year, we can take a little bit from both piles. And that is the way where you can kind of almost identify what you want your tax rate to be and shoot straight for it.
That's right. Yeah. So, Sean, hopefully that gets you pointed in the right direction. And I love that this is something that you're thinking about. But also, at the same time, we don't want you to think about it too much. There are oftentimes when we maybe focus on some of these different aspects of personal finance, it means that if we are overly focusing on it, it means that we are neglecting like some other areas potentially that could move the needle even more, like on the income side or maybe on the spending side. Who knows? But this is just something else to keep in mind as well. But we hope that gives you just the right framework to approach how it is that you decide whether or not you should go with a Roth or the traditional.
My guess, I'm just shooting from the hip here, probably 4 out of 5 people, the Roth makes the most sense. But other people, that 1 out of 5 in those other situations, that's when a traditional makes most sense. But hopefully the way we outlined it can help you figure out which of those buckets you fit most into.
That's right.
But Matt, let's get back to this beer. It's a Czech Pilsner. It's called Var. It's by Halfway Crooks. What were your thoughts on this one?
Now, I thought highly of this beer. This it drank like a clean, refreshing slice of bread in liquid form.
There you go.
You know, it's kind of got those bready elements, but at the same time, you've got the hot presence as well. I don't personally know what makes a Czech Pilsner, but it makes me think.
I looked it up real quick.
Did you? Oh.
Apparently, it's a Pilsner with less hop presence. And so there are some of those Pilsners do have more hop bite going on. This one was super reserved.
So I was wise to lead with a bready, the breadiness.
I've never been to Eastern Europe. To me, this tastes like Eastern Europe in liquid form, what I imagine it to be like. And I would say that's a good thing. I would love to go someday.
Sounds like a lot of fun. We should book a trip. Look out for the next deal. Take our next. What if we, I don't think our wives would be down with us basing our our future travels only on the types of beer that we can drink while we're there. But it is an important consideration.
It's got to factor in.
When you are the How to Money guys, that is something that we think about. But
they knew that when they married us, too.
Although the quality of beers that I have consumed, like for you, you were kind of established in your craft beer ways when you and Emily got married, but I was drinking like Blue Moon.
that's one of the saddest things to me when people think that's a craft beer. And I'm
at
like,
that point,
oh,
like,
no, sorry.
Hey, man, this is back in 07.
That's so. Macro trash. Yeah. But
hey, don't be hating on all the drinkers of Blue Moon out there.
No, I don't hate on them. If that's what they want to drink, that's fine. But it's not craft beer.
You heard it here. Send all the hate mail to joellarsgaard@gmail.com. That is going to be it for this episode, for this Listener Question Monday, this Ask How to Money episode. You can find notes up on the website at howtomoney.com. We'll make sure to link to any of the different resources we may have mentioned. That's where you can also find the sign up for our newsletter.
Well, and the new resources page we created. You said resources, so I figured we should mention we literally have...
Go down the path of the newsletter.
Yeah, well, that's great. Sign up for that. But then also go check out literally our new giant resources page that
we
put together. And so if you've heard us mention something, or you're wondering, trying to find a link of something we mentioned in a past episode, it's probably there. It's a really exhaustive list of some of the resources we've mentioned over the years on the show. It took a while to put together, but we're glad we have it there for you now.
That's right. You can find it on the main menu under Start Here. So it's always there for you. And if it's been a minute since you've been to the website, I would recommend checking it out. We increased site performance.
Yeah.
How fast it is. So it's much more responsive.
It's like the Usain Bolt of websites now. So
honestly, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. So check it out, howtomoney.com. Joel, that's going to be it for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.